Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
Nobody come close to me and you together. Step under my umbrella, we'll make it through any weather. Except when I make it storm, sex in the greatest form. Then hibernate under my body, and yep, I keep you warm at the end of chinchilla. You know I beat it up like the Thriller in Manila. Flying my private jet to villas in Anguilla. Then throw you on the grill, that's 'cause 7 days a week you're my five-course
baby
meal for real.
I'm not afraid. welcome everybody to another episode of Unmasked with author Terry E. Lyle. And I want to thank all my listeners who have tuned in from north to south, east to west, and all my global listeners, you know. And our guest tonight, she's coming straight from Australia. But let me also say hello to my global listeners, the ones in the United States, France, Germany, Senegal, Australia, UK, Canada, Nigeria and Cameroon, Africa, Singapore, Pakistan, Iraq, Peru, Russia, and India. So we are growing, growing, growing. And I haven't checked my stats lately to see whether we've got some more countries to add on board. But, you know, we're grateful for those, you know. And tonight is going to be a great show because this guest tonight, Dr. Saida, she was supposed to be here last week, but because of the time frame difference, we got mixed up. So we stayed on the mic for an hour, me and my co-host talking trash like we do it up here. So, you know anything pop out of our mouth. So anyway, you might want to check out the archives and get your laugh on. But tonight, you know, everybody has heard in the news how Harvey Weinstein and Brett Ratner and all these other guys, you know, who, like, you know, the guy on the news, all these other guys who's been messing up, touching women, touching boys, you know, and they think it's okay to do that, you know. And a lot of times people don't say nothing because the industry seems to have, like, you know, this is the status quo. You want to get ahead, you got to sleep your way to the top, or you got to be quiet or get blackballed. But you know something, my guest tonight, she's going to share her story, how she was violently raped, and how she decided to speak up, and how she's going to share how you can not have to deal with those knuckleheads out there, those perverts, you know, and she's going to give you some strength, you know. And so before we bring her on real quick, we want to say hello to my radio son, Chris. How you doing, darling?
Happy Friday and aloha.
All right, baby. And my radio husband, how you doing, my darling?
Big Papa's doing great, Terry. Thank
all right,
you.
Big Papa. I like that. Come on, Big Papa. Without further ado, we're going to bring aboard our special guest, Dr. Saida Desolets. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, but I know Saida is good. So we just welcome Dr. Saida. How you doing, darling?
I'm doing fantastic, and you said my name perfectly, so thank you for that. And it's such a joy to be here with you this evening.
Same here. And for everybody who know her, I befriended her, so I saw her picture. She's a sultry, beautiful brunette, okay? But she's taken for her. I'm just putting it out there. Don't get excited, but you can like her page or Facebook. I'm telling you, Saida, we are a bunch of knuckleheads up here. You know, we like to have fun, even though we bring knowledge. But, you know, we don't be trying to go by no script, be all hoity-toity. We just come off the grit. You know, whatever our brain is thinking, we just spit it out there. So I want to lead up into how you become, you know, into the sexual sovereignty. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how that brutal rape triggered something in your mind to not cave in, but to not give up, but to, you know, stand tall, you know, and bring voices to people whose voice wasn't heard.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting a little bit of the background story, because I think it's really important to know. I'm not quite a normal human being, and the way I was raised is a little different. I'm French Canadian born, and I was raised on Native reservations in the province of Manitoba. And if you've never been on a First Nations reservation, it's an intense place to be if you are an outsider, especially. So as a child, I was witness to a lot of violence, both domestic violence and sexual violence. And our house had become a sanctuary for kids and for women who just needed to get away from their situation. So from a very young age, I was exposed to what felt scary to me, because my own life wasn't like that. And I got to talk with people directly as a child, like what was happening in their lives. So I think it planted some seeds in my heart to be a spokesperson for people, especially the ones who don't speak up. And that started when I was 6 years old, my very first day of school, grade one. the very first few minutes of school, the school teacher went around and basically put her hand down the pants of every single child, mine included.
What?
Asking us if we liked it. And everyone froze, myself included. It was a very terrifying moment as a child. But I was the only child who actually raised her voice and said something to my parents later that day. The next day we had a brand new teacher. So obviously they listened, they heard, they acted. But what was interesting when I look back is none of the other children said anything. So this culture of silence is, I think, very dominant all over the world. I don't think that we bring children up to speak out and to actually be believed, even if they do speak out. There are many women that I help who have stories of being hurt as a child and they weren't protected by their family. So it's an interesting thing that we have. I share that story so we can kind of have a cultural understanding of the extent of perhaps this silence that has happened, and perhaps why now in this time people are starting to speak out. So it's just an interesting setting because when I was young, people were not speaking out. And then fast forward many years, I become a young woman and I decide to travel to the Caribbean because I love the Caribbean. I love Caribbean music, and found myself probably the baddest boy on the island. And we became lovers, and it was beautiful up until about a week in, and he decided to violate me in ways that were incredibly painful and obviously nearly cost me my life.
Ooh.
And so that was a life-changing moment. Yeah, it was a life-changing moment.
Stop me there for a minute, Aida. You said that you got into for about a week, and then he started changing. Okay, when he was violating you, in his mind, I'm not justifying because I ain't there. In his mind, did he think that was just a type of sexual act? Because, you know, there's a lot of things associated with sex that people are, you know, okay with, whether it's, you know, a dominatrix or whether it's, you know, mistress and master. You know, was he doing something that he thought was something that's okay that you would wanted to do because he might have been familiar with it? Or did he just felt like, you know, since he had you for the week and he kind of knew something about your personality being laid back, that he was just going to take control and force you into something you wasn't comfortable with?
I can't answer for him, but what I do know, it was very clear that I was not into what was happening. It was extremely painful, and it wasn't consensual, and I was screaming my head off for him to stop. And when that didn't work, I basically bit him with every power that I had in my mouth to make him stop. And so, but you know, it's interesting because a lot of sexual violence will happen through a person we know more than a stranger. So that's also very intriguing to look statistically at that. So,
I do know. I'm going to let my co-host ask you a question. But one question real quick so I can get the clarity on this, and I hate that if it's bringing up bad memories. Okay, what was he doing exactly that you weren't comfortable with? You know, when you say you bit him, I hope you try to bite his dick off. I hope it was just an arm or a side or a leg. I hope you try to make him sing soprano. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Trust me, if I could have, I would have, but that wasn't what was happening. So what had happened was I, at that time, I was fairly inexperienced sexually, and I had never had anal sex before in my life.
Oh, okay.
And this man was a very large brother, and there was no permission. Right, no permission, no lube, no warm-up, nothing, no warning.
Oh, wow. You do it like that.
And it was agony. It was agony. And
you don't have to explain no more because I understand, you know, because, you know, back in the day I used to have my own swingers group, and anybody who's into that anal sex, you're right, you have to use some lubrication. You got to be very slow, patient, and gentle. Put a little in, pull a little out. Until you get it in there, you just can't go in there dry and force it. I don't care whether you're small or large, because you can tear, rip open, you know, that part of your body, you know. So, Oh, my gosh. So, basically, you know, this guy just, you know, he was a buster. But I'm going to let, you know, Mark have his first go at the question, and then Chris, and I'm going to continue this. But, you know, I'm glad that you was able to get away without, you know, him trying to, you know, manhandle you and try to shut you up permanently. You know, a lot of times when guys feel like, you know, you're doing something you haven't been doing, they want to take you out the box and want to take your life. So I'm glad you're still here to tell your story.
Thank you.
All right,
Dr. Saida, as a gay man, I don't like to be on the receiving end of anal sex. I mean, I find it uncomfortable. I mean, there have been only a handful of men that have done it to me that I felt comfortable. I mean, that I wasn't in deep pain. So I'm so sorry that happened to you in such a violent way, but something good came out of that, you know, as horrible as that sound, something good, because then you became a champion for women and sexual sovereignty, right?
Amen.
Exactly. And so that's actually part of my message, is that sometimes our greatest pain is actually holds within the hidden gem of our greatest power. And so for me, the facing of my death that had come through the act of violent sexuality brought me into relationship with a whole other possibility, which was that sexuality can be conscious, it can be beautiful, and we can heal, and we can actually enjoy it and move on and have a very expressed life as a sexual person. So in that way, my greatest pain became my greatest power, and I have been blessed to inspire and help the lives of, I don't even know how many people now, but it's in the tens of thousands, maybe 100,000 at this point.
Awesome. That's awesome. Well, that's Chris, up. Baby, you got a question for our guest before we take our break?
Hi, Ida. My question is, how long did it take you? Because I was sexually assaulted, so I know, you know, the experience. I mean, not the same experience you had, but a different experience, but all pain is the same. How long did it take you before you? How long did it take you before you went from victim to survivor?
Amen. Mm.
So yes, and so victim, I guess I wasn't even conscious. I think when you have a violent act like that, you can kind of disassociate and become a little numb. And I was really, really sick because I was fighting for my life. So there was a few months where I just wasn't very clear. But at one point when the doctor finally said, you've got 2 weeks to live, please, you know, put your things in order, it kind of woke me up. It was like a shock. And in that moment, I chose to live. And I think in that moment is when it shifted. Then all the unfolding of my healing journey only amplified, I would say even beyond survivor into thriving. Is where the journey has led for me.
So why your doctor said you had only 2 weeks to live?
Why?
Yeah,
because,
I mean, was the episode, he did something that caused you to hemorrhage or something?
No, so what happened when you rape someone anally with, you know, and you're not using protection, and then you go into their vagina right afterwards, you spread the germs that are held in the ass. And I got PID, which is pelvic inflammatory disease. Yeah,
okay.
And so it is lethal, and if you do survive from it, then usually you're sterile, so you can't have children and things like that. So it's a pretty serious thing to have, and I guess by the time I got medical help, it was in their eyes too late. Obviously, it wasn't, because I'm still talking today, and
wow.
That happened a long time. So yeah.
Yes, and for all our listeners out there, when she said she caught PID, that stands for pelvic infection disease, and that's something that can happen when you're having sex and you go from anal to vagina, you know, because your fecal matter is not supposed to be up there, you know, and that's a serious thing. And so people who are out there doing it and thinking it's okay, you know, better get checked, because you never know what's going on up on the inside. But we're going to take a small break and we're going to be back with our guest, Dr. Saida Desilet, because we need to talk more about this and we need to educate as we go along.
controversial, real, unparalleled. Author Terry E. Lyle has written an autobiography entitled Broken. Terry talks about overcoming her personal battle with suicide, being homeless, selling and using drugs, and living the life of a swinger. She found that with prayer and her belief in God is real, that she was blessed to overcome all adversity to becoming the woman and authoress she is today. The book is $20 and can be purchased through Amazon, Kindle, createspace.com, and from her own personal website at www.terrylyle.com. It's yours today. And make sure you tune in to hear Terry on Unmasked each and every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time on blogtalkradio.com. The number 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. And remember, through God's grace and mercy, all things are possible, for He would not leave you.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle. And that tune was by Demetria McKinney. It's called Easy, you know. She's talking about how she want to hold her brother down, you know. But we're talking with our guest tonight, and we're talking about different guys and just the mood of things that has been going on for years that it's just okay to disrespect women or take control because you're in a position and it's not right. And we know recently in the media, you know, when that Weinstein thing came out, then everybody started coming out, you know. And this is the year, it seemed like 2017, the latter part of it, for everybody being exposed for inappropriate, you know, behavior towards women. And I thank God that our guest, Dr. Saida Desilet, she is the one who is not letting something like that keep her quiet. And a lot of problems that we have, when people have been violated, they don't tell nobody. And usually when they do tell somebody, the family members or the people in charge don't do anything. They try to keep it quiet, so you have nowhere to turn to. So we're going to let our guest come back and share her story, but we're going to let Chris talk first. He has a question. And so, Chris, you got the mic, darling.
All right. Well, Dr. Saida, I was reading your biography, your bio on your website, and you've done lots of great work for women and with women. What would you say is the best thing you've done? Like, what is your favorite project?
Thank you so much for asking that question. I think I love it all. I really do. I think the most beautiful thing for me with anyone is just to see when a woman really gets that she matters and that her voice matters and that having a female body is something that's beautiful and she can feel safe and at home in herself. That always lights me up. It feels like it fulfills my purpose here in the world. So whether I do that individually or in a group or in a live event or online, it really doesn't change the joy that I feel when a woman really comes back home to herself in this way.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and Mark, you got a question, and then I'm going to have my question, because that's a good point she just made, so I'm going to try to hold that because I got something I want to add about that. But go ahead, Mark, darling.
Yeah, I was listening to a very fascinating interview that you did, Dr. Saida, earlier, and you were talking about the fact that parents have been enculturated to go along with a lot of these sexual traumas of your childhood, and that we should stop teaching young girls to be nice and to go and Uncle Jim when you don't want to.
Yeah.
And this idea that they're selling G-strings for five-year-olds.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. And could you kind of expound on that whole thing?
Sure. So I think, yes. So when there's injury like this that comes into a highlight, it's really important not to just point fingers to individuals, because what is happening is obviously it doesn't happen in a vacuum. So we have to look at culturally, what is it that we value? How are we behaving as a culture, as a society? And when we start looking at simple things like socializing young girls out of being connected with her own body, being relaxed in her own body, that certain things are not okay for her to enjoy and other things maybe. But a lot of times she's shamed to even have a little bit of pleasure in her own body. Then we look at yet still being forced to interact, perhaps with a, doesn't matter if it's an auntie or an uncle or a neighbor, somebody. Well, she doesn't feel good about it, and this is true for little boys as well, but it's very dominant in little girls, to force them then to go ahead and so that the adult doesn't feel bad. We'd rather override a child's instinct, her intuition, her sense of sovereignty, her sense of boundaries, than have an adult feel slightly uncomfortable because the child doesn't want to hug them. And I'm not of that mind. I'm of the mind that nice girls, it's good to learn some manners. Obviously, we want to treat each other with respect and understand how to be with one another in a way that's socially, it's beautiful and it's easy. But not at the cost of overriding this instinctual part, this part of ourselves that knows, can feel when something's off, when something's not right. We have all had moments, unspoken moments in our life where a person walks in the room and it just changes everything. We can feel that.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine then being conditioned where you're not allowed to say something. You have to stay where there's danger or you have to engage with it. I don't think that that's a great way to bring up kids. And I think children should definitely be taught to, my father, when I was, I think as young as 3 years old, would tell me, if anyone ever touches you without your permission, like even if they just touch you, it's not allowed. You come and tell me right away. You yell, you scream, you hit, you scratch, you do something. It's not okay that anyone other than mom and myself, because then obviously they need to dress me, bathe me at that age. And so I did. I would always tell my parents, and they would always listen. But I don't know that that is a common practice. And it should be, because children need to know their boundaries. Yeah, boundaries are healthy.
Right.
Boundaries keep us safe. Boundaries can even be really sexy, So boundaries are part of being sexually sovereign, of being, a capable human being. And yet we don't even teach our children boundaries. And mostly because children are not learning from what we say. They're learning from how we live. And they're watching mom, and they're watching dad, and they're watching TV, and they're watching these things, and they're witnessing a huge culture that disrespects one another, that doesn't value sexuality as something beautiful and natural, but something that's more like a commodity. They're seeing all of that, and then they emulate that because they believe that that's how life is. That's how they learn.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a big job for all of us who want to create change to literally be that change in ourselves, not just talk about it, but actually live it.
And you're absolutely right, Dr. Saida, because I was raised in a family where I don't care who it is, uncle, friend of the family, you don't let little girl children sit on men's lap, and I see a lot of people allowing their daughters to sit on people's lap. I don't care because you know them, neighbor, but, I was raised that way, too. It's inappropriate. It don't look right, and I don't like to see a man wanting to always bounce a little girl on his lap, because, there's so many perverts out there, and a lot of times, like you said earlier, the face of a pervert is usually someone that you know, so that, when you try to speak about it, people don't want to believe it because they know the person, but they're not always strangers. But the question I had when you was talking earlier to Chris was, I know there's help that's needed for women who have been violated. What kind of help do the husbands need or should get? Because a lot of men that have their mate been violated, they have a hard time trying to readjust to her not wanting to be touched because she's still dealing with it. Also, by the fact that she has been violated by someone and it's not him. And sometimes the guys, they can't cope, with their wife or fiance or whoever, being raped. Sometimes it's not easy for them as well to be part of the solution.
Yeah. I think with any trauma, from as PTSD trauma to psychological trauma, physical, all traumas affect not just the person who's been traumatized, but anyone who's in relationship with that, purely for the reason that we're connected. We don't live in a vacuum. We care, we love, we cherish the people in our lives, and so we are going to feel whatever we feel. So it's very important, if you're the support person in a person's life that is going through something, to really feel your feelings, to own them, to be willing to be vulnerable, to talk about it, maybe not directly with the person if that's not an open space, but go and seek someone that can handle hearing what needs to be said. What I've noticed, especially around sexual trauma, is no one wants to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Your best friend doesn't want to talk about it. Your parents don't want, nobody wants to talk about it because there's so much, people feel a lot of shame. People feel helpless and hopeless. And rather than feeling those things, they just kind of want to avoid it. But we need to feel those things and then lean into a really difficult conversation saying, wow, like this really hurts. I'm so freaking angry. I could kill someone right now. mm-hmm. right? And yeah. be able to say those things because they're true in the moment, because when they're repressed, it's even worse. And to trust, here's a very important thing. People who've had trauma are not victims. And when we hold them as victims, we eradicate the possibility of them being powerful in their healing. So how we need to see them is, I know you've been victimized, and you're powerful, and it may take time, but you've got this. And I will be here in whatever way you need me to be here, but I am here, and I'm not going anywhere. When we can see victims as actual human beings who've been victimized, yet they are powerful, because who they are isn't what happened to them. Who they are is much bigger than what just happened to them. So we need to remind them of that by allowing them to feel like, as horrible as this feels, we still have the power to heal ourselves. We still have the power of transformation, and it will take time.
Mm-hmm.
These things have their own time, and some people heal faster than others. Some people, when they were a child, were repeatedly assaulted. That is a different injury than someone who had their butt grabbed at a party. It's all a bit insulting and traumatizing, but it has different degrees of impact. So it's important, if it's been extremely violent, that the person, you know, if that is your loved one, that you're able to let them know that you're there no matter what, whatever they might need. And it and then you're just honest. This is really hard for me too. I'm
That's
really
true.
Scared too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the vulnerability and curiosity that will heal these situations. If we try and numb ourselves to avoid it, and then we're not curious, we just make a bunch of assumptions, then we're really walking away from powerful healing. But if we can get curious, if we can get vulnerable, there's just in the simple human act of those two things, we can't underestimate the power of that.
Right. I like that.
Wow, that's very important. You know, it's sad, though. I used to be a paramedic, and I was responding on a call where a woman was raped. And with really agitated me was that the female was out on the ground shaking, you know, and the police never tried to cover her up. They sitting there walking around gawking and everything and showing her no respect. So as I rode with her in the ambulance to the hospital, you know, I kept talking to her because she didn't want nobody touching, nobody male. And because, you know, I'm female, I guess I was soothing the way I was treating her. But we got to learn across the board, you know, first of all, when someone is being molested or victimized, they are a victim. You got to see them as a victim. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to show them that respect while they're going through the mental, emotional, and physical recovery. Also, the people that's in position, whether it's the emergency crew, fire department, or paramedics or whatever, they got to be conscious and patient with these people because they just went through something. So everybody needs to be educated, because if we don't all get educated, then we're not going to see the problem with it, you know?
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's I want to make a distinction here, Terry, because it is hard for people to hear this. But even
uh-huh.
if someone has had a victimized experience, and we
uh-huh.
need to respect that, we still need to see them as powerful. Because if we
uh-huh.
don't, they won't remember that for themselves.
Exactly.
This is the greatest. It's like someone who's going through cancer and chemo. If you see them like you're dead and dying,
they're going to give
they
up.
They already are facing that. So they're going to give up. So what we need to do is, like, you've got this, like, see them and treat them like they're powerful and they've got it. I cannot tell
uh-huh.
you from being on the other side how hard it was for me that I had to hold my community because they couldn't hold me.
Uh-huh.
You know, for me to be trying to heal myself and then trying to hold people because they're stressed around my rape.
Yeah, there's too much for you to do.
Yeah, uh-huh. so this is what we're doing all the time because we're not willing as adults to just own, I feel really messed up about this. I don't even know what to say right now. And that's
right.
honest. And it's important, I think, to stop feeling like we have to be perfect and have to have it all sorted out. We don't. It is messy.
Well, did that guy get any time? Did he get any time? Did you have a locked up? Dr. Saida?
Oh, sorry.
Did you have him locked up?
Oh, you know, I get asked this question a lot. I have no idea whatever happened to him because he was in the Caribbean. I flew back to Canada to go to the hospital. And my last interaction with him is I wrote a letter to him saying, I've been told I'm dying of this. You may want to get checked out. And that was all that ever happened in the direction with that man. And I want to say this because it's important. My healing wasn't dependent on anything that he would do or not do. I didn't put my power, my ability to reclaim my life on what would happen to him. And that's an important thing to say, because sometimes there isn't retribution. Sometimes there isn't a way of resolving it with the other. And if we put the power fully in that, we will never feel resolution in ourselves, at least for me. So I think it was very important for me to go, I'm going to do what I can do for me, and I'm going to do the best that I can, and then just move forward from that space.
Wow. Amen. Well, on that note, we're going to take a small break and we'll be back. And so Mark and Chris can ask their questions. But stay with us. We'll be back at 2:02. Wow.
Eventually, the truth will come out of the darkness for everyone to see.
Hello? Hey, it's Mark. Hey, how you doing? Oh, yeah, everything's good. It's just been really good. Sorry I haven't been there. Yes. Oh, I forgot, but I will be there this week. Right now.
There are times in your life when your faith will be challenged.
Hey, man. I want to share something with you. I accepted Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior. He's been really wonderful to me. Don't you agree?
I feel like I'm my own God. For things that's been happening to me, I feel like I've been making those things happen.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me you don't believe in God?
Well, I haven't seen him.
The truth can come in shocking form.
Nobody up in my house when I'm at work all day. No! No! Who is this? Why is he in my house? Who are you, man?
Is this your mom?
Who are you? Mother, this is my woman and this is my house!
Oh, my girlfriend.
What is, why is he in this house? What do you mean you didn't know?
When the secret is no longer hidden, you have now been exposed. Written by authoress Terry E. Lyle. Check out her website and on Blog Talk Radio every Friday at 7:30 p.m.
Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle. I want to thank all my listeners from north to south and east to west. And that tune was by Keisha Cole, I remember. You know, and I just want to thank my guests for being here on this Friday evening, and Dr. Saida Desolette, and my co-host, Chris. He got a question, then Mark, and then we're going to see about wrapping this thing up. Well, Chris, this is your opportunity to ask your question, darling.
All right. Well, Saida, there are lots of female celebrities who speak out for women, and you know, like Bette Midler and you know, Rosie O'Donnell and all these, you know, Cher. So, out of all the female celebrities who do that, who are your favorites?
Oh wow! You know, they all have something really unique. So I enjoy each of the characters, but I actually really like Pink.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah.
And I think good. Because I'm a bit of a spunky, rebellious type of person, and so her spunkiness. She's so true to herself. She never tries to be anything other than herself, and she has such deep love for her daughter. And so when she speaks, it's like all of me really lights up. I think her personality I relate to the most out of most of the speakers at this point.
Amen. Cool. I feel like Pink as well.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, good question. All right, Mark, baby.
No, Dr. Sayan, I love the idea of women becoming their own true sexual selves without men perceiving it as an invitation. And that they must learn to ask permission. When Donald Trump, who is not my president, said in that infamous Access Hollywood tape, and he was bragging about grabbing women by their pussies, and then, of course, the Harvey Weinstein scandal broke, and then Matt Lauer, and down the road, every day it seems like a new man is being taken out by sexual misconduct. I was going to ask you, what are the pros and cons of Me Too movement? Are we just scratching the surface right now, or are we making major changes? And how do you start to change the cultural mindset?
Yeah, I really love this question. Thank you so much for asking it. The Me Too movement, let's first look at what I like about it, and then let's look at what I'd love to see more of. So what I love about it is the rise of a voice, any voice, whether it's a man or a woman or even a child, the voice of being able to say, hey, this happened. Having the space to just speak and be heard is a big phenomenon in a culture that tends to not want to discuss these things. So already that's a massive shift, just to be able to say, hey, publicly, this is what's happened. I think what's concerning me a little bit is that there's some extreme reactions to what's happening, where some people have suggested that nothing short of castrating the entire male gender would resolve the problem, which horrifies me. And I say that because it seems to actually not just be one person thinking that there are people that actually think this way. And I don't believe that that's what's going to change things in the long term for us and really help what's happening. So here's a few things that I believe that sexual sovereignty, I'm going to tell you what that is and why it's so important in this answer. So sexual sovereignty basically means that you have the full authority over your physical body and your sexuality, that you are the sole person that can decide what happens to your fertility, when and how you have pleasure and with whom. That is only for you to decide, and not a government, not an institution, and not even another person. So sexual sovereignty is that. It also comes with tremendous responsibility, because now you are responsible to speak out, to have boundaries, to be clear, and to deeply respect yourself. And when we do that, we actually tend to respect others.
Amen.
So if we could, thank you. And if we could globally really get that this is a birthright, that you have the right to your own body. And if you look right now, if you do a search, you will not find that those words are stated in the Human Charter of Rights with the United Nations. Maybe they're alluded to here and there, but there isn't a clear statement. There's a clear statement. You have the right to rest. You have the right to work, the right to marry, like these types of things. The right to own property. But you nowhere was it stated that you had the right to your own body. And I think collectively that's really crucial, because in the collective mind, if we don't know and feel like we have the right to our own body, then of course we disrespect our bodies. Of course there's then slavery and abuse and this and that. So collectively there needs to be a shift even just there, that this body is something that we are keepers of and we get to have authority over. And that's very, very important, even with children, because parents will have to bathe them and care for them. But if we do so out of a deep respect and reverence of the sovereignty of this child, that's very important. I've had women come to me and say, my father told me that he made me, so he had the right to molest me. And so I think that's, you know, terrible idea. But again, it's a cultural, unspoken cultural, even lack of claiming of our bodies. So the claiming of body is very important. The claiming of being in our body and having deep respect for our body is also very important. And that will start to shift then how we treat one another's bodies. The other thing that I think is really important to say here is that sexuality is not a currency. We're not meant to bargain with it. We're not meant to exchange with it. Sexuality is like a heartbeat. It's like our breath. It's part of being a human being. And when we start to treat sexuality like it's an unnatural part of who we are versus a commodity, we're going to see a very big shift in how we treat one another. And I'm not talking about a world that we're all monks and nuns. I'm talking about a world where we have very healthy and expressed and diverse sexuality. It's people who are that have ownership of their sexuality and have boundaries that are actually really safe to be around. The ones who are not safe to be around don't tend to have that kind of ownership and understanding. So this is, I think, those two things, self-ownership, self-claiming, and then understanding and recontextualizing sexuality as a, you know, this is part of me, it's natural versus something I bargain with. Those two collective shifts, I feel, need to be part of this discussion. It's very important. And then the last thing I'm going to say about the Me Too movement is I want to know, okay, now what? So the story is out, we've spoken, we've been heard, and now what? I want to know what kind of world, Terry, Mark, Chris, what kind of world do you want to live in together? Because we're in this together. So what kind of world would you love to live in? And that's where the discussion needs to go, not only in this guy's a jerk and that one's an asshole and this and that, because the labeling, shaming, and blaming ends the creative conversation.
Exactly. Well, seems like we're running out of time.
About this.
You're supposed to be. And Dr. Saida, thank you so much for coming back on the show. But once you've been a guest on my show, it's home for you. Anytime you got something new or a book that's coming out you want to discuss or upcoming engagement, please come back and be our guest again, because you can come on here as many times as you want to, because I run this shit up here.
Thank you. It's been so much fun.
Yes.
So enlightened.
So, Chris, Mark, say goodbye to our wonderful guests. We got to take it home because we got about less than a minute on the clock.
Okay, bye-bye. Nice to meet you.
That was cute.
Wonderful to meet all of you. Thank you, and also to the listeners.
I like it. Love you, Dr. Saida. Come back. You got my home number. Give me a call, darling.
All right, sweetheart.
All right, baby.
We'll talk about anything.
Yes.
I met you in the dark, you lit me up, you made me feel as though I wasn't up. We danced the night away, We drank too much. I held your hair back when you were throwing up. Then you smiled over your shoulder. For a minute I was stone cold sober. I pulled you closer to my chest. And you asked me to stay over. I said I already told you. I think that you should get some rest. Oh, I knew I loved you then, but you never know. Cause I played it cool when I was scared of letting go. I knew I needed you, but I never showed. But I wanna stay with you until we're gray and old. And just say you won't let go. I'll wake you up with some breakfast in bed. I'll bring you coffee with a kiss on your head. Then I'll take the kids to school, wave them goodbye. I'll thank my lucky stars for that night. When you looked over your shoulder, for a minute I forget that I'm older. I wanna dance with you right now. And you look as beautiful as ever. I swear every day will get better. You make me feel this way somehow. I'm so in love with you. I hope you know. Darling, your love is more than worth its weight in gold. We've come so far, my dear. Look how we've grown. I wanna stay with you until we're gray and old. Just